We'll call a meeting to order, even though there's just three of us. That's enough, as far as I'm concerned. We're on House time, not Senate time. Representative Lanning, welcome to the committee. We'll wait till we get a quorum to move your bill for possible inclusion, and then to move that amendment too. So, why don't you just go ahead and explain the bill first, and then when we get enough people in the room, we'll move the bill and the amendment. You can explain the amendment at that time then. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The bill before you is House File 720, and this bill funds a pilot workforce program for an additional 2 years at a $250,000 a year level. Last year, we funded this program for 1 year. And prior to that, DEED had provided a startup grant to start the process of working on this pilot study. I'll explain the amendment when we get to that point. As members know, oftentimes support services end for someone once they're employed. And oftentimes there isn't the kind of support in the transition that people need as they move into the workforce. And as a result of that, many people end up back on assistance because there hasn't been the kind of support they need in the transition period. In fact, nationally, they estimate that between 30 and 50% of the people who are in that transition mode end up going back on assistance. And so that obviously becomes a problem. There was an experiment with this in North Carolina called Connect Inc. And what they did, it's a program after which this Northern Connections program was modeled, that they were able to reduce their recidivism to under 10% from upwards of 50% before. And they did that by providing support and counseling to people as they were making the transition from assistance to to employment. The estimate last year when we presented this bill was that that investment on the part of the state had the potential of saving us about $2 million over the biennium in MPIP costs. And so we believe that this is a good, prudent investment on the part of the state. To further explain the Northern Connections program, this pilot study, I first would like to call on Deb Carpenter, who's the executive director, and she's located in Pearl.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Northern Connections serves...
Why don't you say your name, ma'am?
My name is Deborah Carpenter, and as Representative Lanning said, we are located in Pearl, Minnesota, but we serve a nine-county region in west-central Minnesota. And what we do is we work with families as they transition off of Minnesota Family Investment Program or Diversionary Work Program when they no longer are receiving cash assistance, either because they've received a job or because they've been sanctioned. And we work with them on a couple of goals. First, reemployment. So if they aren't currently working, how they can get attached to work quickly. Or if the work situation isn't working out for them, how we can help them get back into the employment market. We also work with them on job retention, you know, what we can do to help support them on the job, help them address the barriers that are causing them difficulty on the job to make sure that that job that they have is successful for them. And we also work on career advancement, having people who have had a big emphasis as they've moved through the MFIT program on getting a job, began to think about longer term having a career and thinking about the skills that they need for a career, whether it's on the job training that they might need or going back to school to acquire different skills that will help them move into higher wage positions over a period of time. And then helping them with asset accumulation. How people begin to restore the credits. Many of the families we're working with have had some credit history issues, and so credit repair is an important piece for them. How we can get them plugged into programs that might help them save in terms of a longer-term goal of being able to purchase a home or purchase a more reliable form of transportation or to go back to school. and then helping make referrals as barriers come up to agencies that can help them in addressing those barriers. The types of goals that we're working with families aren't things that are done in, you know, a couple of weeks. Some goals can be met in a shorter period of time, but when you're dealing with asset accumulation, career advancement, those tend to be longer-term goals. So typically we would be working with a family for 1 to 2 years to achieve those goals. I have with me Lisa Lindberg is a participant in our program, and then we had another participant, Maria Torres, who, because last week she started a second job, wasn't able to come today, but did have a statement prepared, and so Beth Chapin, who works with Maria, is going to read Maria's statement. So Lisa, perhaps you could talk about your experience.
Lisa, welcome to the committee, and just say your name before you start your statement.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Lindberg. I've been a part of this program for about 7 months. They have been very helpful with me in information on getting a job and keeping it, correcting my credit, purchasing a home, starting savings account, correcting my credit. They keep in touch with me all the time on the phone to encourage me to just finish things, like keeping goals, starting them and keeping them. They've just been real helpful to me.
Okay, thank you. Welcome.
I'm Beth Chapin, and I'm a counselor with Northern Connections. On behalf of Maria Torres in Douglas County, age 22, with two children under six, she would like me to read her statement, though she could not be here today.
Go ahead.
She says that Northern Connections has helped me by contacting me weekly to check in with me and make sure that I'm all right. Northern Connections counselors have a valuable resource and job leads that assist me and help me because most of the time I'm already busy and have little time to look for work. Northern Connections reminds me that I should move forward and help me put things in perspective and set goals for the future. They give me hope. Specifically, she says that Northern Connections has helped me make more confident choices and helped me be more confident with people, asking questions, and asking for help. They have guided me towards resources and have given me the confidence that I am on the right road and there is someone to turn to if I need help. I would like to say, on behalf of Maria Torres, that the work that Northern Connections does is valuable to me, and I would recommend it to others.
Thank you for your testimony. I guess, I don't know if it's Maury or whom now. What, you said, ma'am, you serve a 9-county area, and I'm assuming besides Representative Norris's district you just walked in is, who else, what other counties, what areas are you serving?
We serve 9 counties. We serve the Clay County, Becker County, Douglas County, Grant County, Ottertail County, Wilkins, Stevens, Pope, and Traverse counties in west central Minnesota. The other aspect of this program is because it's done telephonically, we are not geographically bound, so we've had some discussions with two adjoining counties, and since we do operate telephonically, you know, we are able to expand our service area without having to relocate into another location. I should also mention we are open 8:30 to 8 Monday through Friday and 9 to 5 on Saturday so that we can meet the needs of our customers when the customers have time to talk with us, because their schedules vary from week to week, and that availability is really important for our customers.
Okay. Representative Nornes offers the 0291 amendment, AO70291. You all have the amendment in front of you. Representative Lanning is proposing a dollar-for-dollar match. Are there any questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Any further questions of the... Oh, excuse me. Representative Norris, would you care to move the bill then? We didn't move it because...
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Representative
House File 720.
Moves that House File 720 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. As amended, be held over. For possible inclusion, we don't need a vote. We don't have to vote in my committee, Representative Lanning. We're just going to do it later when we put the bills together. We'll be acting on all the bills. We appreciate your testimony. And if there are no further questions then on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, if I might thank
Annie,
you.
Go ahead.
Again, and just mention that all of the House members in our nine-county area have signed on to the bill. It's a bipartisan support for it, as it was last year when we got the first phase of this. And it's carried in the Senate by Senator Scogin, who represents District 10. And I think members were very optimistic about this program producing very good results. And I think it will show that maybe this is the kind of program that should eventually be extended to other parts of the state as well. We think it's a good test. Thank you.
Representative Lang, clarification. So you did have a little bit of a... what was the funding for last year or last
meeting? Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, last year it was $250,000 for the first year, and the bill before you now would continue that for two more years in order to give this the kind of true test it needs as a pilot study.
Okay, so that was just a one-year appropriation, one-time appropriation.
And, yes, Mr. Chairman.
And did it require a dollar-for-dollar match?
Last year it required a match, and that was inadvertently left out of the original draft of this bill, so we've added the match back in.
Thank you very much. Representative Poppy, House Bill 1535, Representative Poppy moves that House Bill 1535 be recommended to pass and have been held for possible inclusion. See, I just try to do everything for everybody. I mean, thank you, Representative Poppy, for that motion, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And you have a couple of testifiers.
I certainly do.
Go ahead.
House File 1535 is similar to many of the programs that we've heard about in the last few days and weeks. It is a pilot project, and it's going to help the disadvantaged people, economically disadvantaged populations within the areas of Mauer, Freeborn, Dodge, and Steele counties. And so I thank Representatives Ruth, Demmer, Fritz, and Brown for signing on also to this bill. And with me today I have Randy Johnson and Bob Hawes, who are from the Workforce Development Center and from our region, and they are here to speak about the bill. So I'll just ask them to go ahead.
Welcome to the committee, gentlemen. Whoever wants to go first, identify yourself. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Randy Johnson, the Executive Director of Workforce Development Incorporated, and also representing the Workforce Investment Board in southeastern Minnesota, a 10-county region that is administered and housed out of Rochester, Minnesota. Mr. Chair, we've operated programs of employment and training in that region, southeast Minnesota, for the past 20-some years. And we operate those programs across the board. The state of Minnesota has a pretty good response system, I believe, for dislocated workers, which allows us to do a very thorough assessment of the people's skill needs and provides the ability to send someone to school to be retrained in case they need some other skills to compete in the workforce. But when it comes to some other categories of folks that we see, I think that the delivery mechanism is a bit deficient. And let me explain. Probably two-thirds of the people coming through the doors of our workforce centers in southeast Minnesota, and I think it's true for a large extent across the state, are those from the welfare reform system. And we've operated those programs, again, in conjunction with the counties and DHS for the last some 20 years. We've seen those programs go from where training was allowed and encouraged for people to be able to gain some skills, to where virtually all of the people receive those kinds of services, to a position where we're at now where it's known as Work First, where essentially no one gets any kind of training to upgrade skills. It's a quick turnaround for people to move them out to employers. We're getting pushback by the representatives of our employers in that area saying, you know what, that system doesn't work. We have the chair of our board is from long-term care, who will respond to us saying, you know, we get funded based on our turnover rate. That's how we deal with it. Our income as it comes in through state-funded sources and medical assistance. And they said, when we get people without skills, they don't stay. We can't keep them, and it's really hurting us. So it's not really a strategy to do that kind of thing. So what we're proposing is that there's middle ground here. Our own experience has shown that if we can get people not only assessed as to their aptitude, which is a very real thing, and give the kind of supportive services that was talked about previously with the group that was here before, but also add to that some kind of short-term training to give them real competitive skills in the industries that are in need, not just for any job, but those good jobs that are also in those growing industries, we've got a real chance for success. And we think that the current system that we have kind of ties our hands behind the back, our back. We get caught up in a lot of paperwork, tracking things called participation rates and et cetera, which that's a federal initiative, and I guess we're not going to be able to do anything about that here today, but it really consumes all our time and energy just pushing paper, and it's not really doing the best for the people. What we're proposing here is to replicate something that we've already accomplished with the healthcare industry in our area. Healthcare is number one, manufacturing is right on its heels, number two. If we could better dissect the needs of the local employers in this very targeted region in the manufacturing industry, we believe that we've got a handout here that will show some of the flow charts through a manufacturing academy working on basic skills and in connection with the schools.
Yeah,
that's already been around. Okay. Yeah. And we believe that working in conjunction with Adult Basic Ed and with our technical colleges in our region and ourselves, we can have a process here of making sure that people have work competencies and then moving through what we'd call a manufacturing academy, be able to get those skills that they need to compete in advancing career opportunities in the manufacturing field. We've proven to ourselves in our current setup that basic generic kind of job search activities for folks coming through the welfare system that we calculate a return on investment on, that is how many dollars come back into the local community when we find a job for somebody who previously wasn't working and we get them off welfare and we have those kinds of welfare savings divided by the kind of investment that we had, we're getting about 800% return on investment. That is $8 returned to government for every dollar expended. But in the case of healthcare, when we went through the trouble of making sure their skills were honed and focused in healthcare and put those folks through that process, including some who had limited English skills, we were able to drive that number up to $11.50 coming back to government for every dollar invested. We'd like to do that for manufacturing as well. So that's the basis of what I have.
Thank you very much. Why don't we just hold our questions if we have any. Mr. Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Bob Haas. I am the area manager for Workforce Development Incorporated in the Austin and Elbert Lee areas. And I don't know that there's a lot that I can add to what Mr. Johnson has already said, but we do have a really good track record in our area in placing people, and I would certainly like to have the opportunity to expand on that. We have excellent staff, and we have an excellent relationship with the businesses in our area, so thank you very much.
Okay, questions of either of the witnesses? Mr. Johnson, perhaps, or Representative Poppy. How many people do you expect to serve with this?
We proposed 80 people to go through this process in this year that we'll be using to pilot this project. And it has replication opportunities throughout this whole thing to not only expand throughout the rest of our region and our area, but throughout the state.
And is there any matching requirement with this, or are you intending?
We haven't proposed any, but obviously there are matchable dollars. We operate with Federal Workforce Investment Act dollars.
And finally, from my information, you know, while we do pilot projects around here, being that I'm new in this position, and I don't know, is somebody going to report back if there was funding provided for this to tell us what kind of success story you
We propose
are?
To do that, but there should be a thorough report. We are proposing this goes through the Department of Employment and Economic Development, not directly to ourselves, and that we would generate a report that would be shared throughout the state. I should note that the Department of Employment and Economic Development has noted our approach toward demand-driven services with employment and training and feels that we have some things to offer to the rest of the state. So I'm sure they'd be encouraging us to share that kind of information and help us replicate that throughout the state.
Well, thank you very much. Other questions from members? Thank you, then.
Thank you.
Hold it over
members.
For possible inclusion.
Thank you.
And Representative Mallory is here, so...
Oh,
Representative, yes, Cy, you come up because he's not here, so we're jumping you up. Welcome to the committee, Representative Cao. Representative Welty, I'm sure, would love to move your bill. Right, Representative Welty? Representative Welty?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 377. I move that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Welty moves that House File 377 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you,
Senator Tom, my favorite hunter on my property.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Not a very good hunter at that, I might add. So.
Didn't shoot anything. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You look pretty sharp. You probably got your hair cut.
Do I need one?
You do. Thank you. I'm happy to introduce House File 377 on behalf of LifeTrack. LifeTrack Resources is a long-standing nonprofit agency located in St. Paul here. Their mission is to build better lives by working together to develop people's strength. One very important area of work that LifeTrack Resource is involved in is employment services for legal immigrants and refugees. These services are provided through a collaboration with a lot of other community organizations, including the Jewish Community Family Services. The Korea Collaborative assists refugees and immigrants who are struggling to find stable employment. Many refugees and immigrants want to work but lack workplace English skills and face other barriers entering the workforce. The collaborative works with these individuals by using culturally appropriate multilingual employment services that focus on orientation to the U.S. workforce, jobs-seeking skills, English language training, work-related English classes, and job retention. As you know, new immigrants are going to be a big part of Minnesota's future. And it serves the state well to make sure that employment services are available to these individuals. Currently, $250,000 per year is being appropriate for this program. However, with more than 341,000 immigrants in Minnesota, we are requesting to double that amount to be able to serve more people. With a further detail about the organization, Ms. Diane Hell will be here to answer questions. She's from LifeTrack Resource. We have Liz Nordell, she's with the St. Paul Public Schools, and Mr. Abdi A.Z. Abraham, the Minnesota is no longer just Anderson and Nelson anymore. And they will go and start with their presentation. So.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Abraham. Just say your name for the record and then go.
My name is Abdi A.Z. Abraham, and I'm happy to be here today to testify on behalf of the self-sufficiency program of LifeTrack and VSS. This program has helped me personally tremendously to start a new life here in Minnesota. I come to Minnesota from Kenya. I came here in June of 2006, that's last year. At first when I came here, I didn't know here anybody, and I felt very lonely and lost. When I learned from a friend of mine about the self-sufficiency program at VSS, I went there to meet the job counselors. And I felt from the beginning that they were enthusiastic. They were ready about helping me and helping me find a job. After the counselors interviewed me about my employment background and interests, they helped me write a resume. It was a new word to me. I knew a CV curriculum at the time. They also taught me how to do a job interview properly here in America and how to present myself and answer questions confidently. The counselors took me to interviews at several temp agencies and provided transportation, the most important thing, because I didn't have a car of my own. Job interviews are always stressful, if you know, if you don't know. But the fact that the counselors accompanied me everywhere I go helped me and motivated me. The interviews went well, and 7 months ago I was hired for a good job in medical assembly with the St. Jude Medical Company in Minnetonka. This is a full-time job with a wage of $11.25 per hour. I'm happy about that. I'm a still temp worker, but I'm hoping very soon the company should realize my hard working and give me a full-time with benefits, whatever. What I would like to say today is that without the help and encouragement of VSS, I may not have been able to find a job, or at least a job as the one I have now. The employment counselors know all the avenues that job seekers can follow and are tremendously supportive. They are still keeping their eyes open for new jobs that may suit me even better, or the ones with better pay, if I say better. I also go to Vietnamese social services and it's time to use the internet job search center to look for new jobs. I hope you'll be able to support VSS and their affiliates. Thank you for listening to me today.
Mr. Chair, members, VSS is a agency that collaborates with LifeTrack.
Okay.
They would give part of this money.
So, are there questions from any of the members?
Why don't we go with Ms. Nordell and then we'll go forward.
Okay, Ms. Nordell, go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Lee Nordell, and I work for the St. Paul Public Schools. I'm the adult basic education counselor for the Ronald Hubbs Center in St. Paul. Thank you for allowing me to speak, particularly about the value that the employment program of Jewish Family Services adds to our organization, the Hubbs Center. You may know this already, but the Hub Center serves about 80% of our students are immigrants and refugees. We have about 1,000 students a day coming through our building, so that's about 800 a day that come through that are immigrants and refugees. Most of our students have limited English. That's why they're studying at the Hub Center. And they do need extra assistance to find and keep employment. And I'm happy to say that we've had a good partnership with the Jewish Family Services for the last more than 2 years, and they have helped many of our students become employed and more self-sufficient. We've referred many students to them, more than they can actually help. I understand that they've helped 82 students in our program, and that's a lot. And they've already closed the files on 43 of them, which means that many of them have held employment already for 180 days. And as I said, we have a waiting list. They've been very successful in helping our students prepare resumes, practice interview questions, and locate job opportunities. And Jewish Family Services has a regular staff person that comes on a regular basis to the Hub Center to help our students right on site. Because of transportation, they wouldn't be able to go over to the Jewish Family Services building. And not only do they work one-to-one with our students, this past winter, they organized a job fair in our building on site where employers came to offer students jobs. And so that was a very valuable service to our students. Our experience with Jewish Family Services has been overwhelmingly successful. And they do provide our students with employment skills, teach them to be strong employees, as I mentioned. So I hope that I've given a little bit of insight into the kind of collaboration that we have with this organization and the contribution that they're making to our students. I'd like to thank the social services staff and the state of Minnesota for the assistance that they have provided to immigrants who are trying to start a new life in this country. And we are a country of immigrants, and this has made our country strong and successful. thank you for the opportunity to speak with you, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Nardell. And I'd be remiss to Mr. Ibrahim if I didn't say congratulations to you on your new employment, and hopefully someday you can go back and be a doctor that implants some of those medical devices. But Ms. Nardell, I'm a little more confused now than I was, and I'm confused all the time. So help me connect the lines between VSS and Jewish Family Services and the Hub Center and Life Track Resources.
Okay. Diane probably could answer that question.
Diane, welcome to the community. Do it quickly, though. We have a lot of other...
Yes. I'm Diane Help from Life Track Resources. This partnership is with Life Track Resources, Hmong American Partnership, Jewish Family Services, and Vietnamese Social Services. Those are the four agencies that get funding through this grant. And one of the ways that we encourage clients to into our services is by working with other places that refugees and immigrants are attending, and that would one of the places would be the Hub Center. So it's working with the English teachers who have a lot of clients that need jobs and allowing them to get employment services.
Okay. Any questions? Further questions, Representative Norton.
Chair Rukavina, I can't even do your name today. Sorry about that.
It's like Ibrahim. It's like, a, you know, same thing. Well, they weren't all Johnsons and Larsons.
Isn't that the truth? Members and testifiers, I come from Rochester. We have a large immigrant population there as well, and I think the citation that Representative Tao mentioned was statewide. And this is a statewide need. And as I'm listening to this, it's sounding like it's the funding goes to one particular source for one particular community, and I'm wondering if that is the case, and if it is the case, if there's interest in broadening the scope so that similar collaboratives in other communities could have the benefit of this, what sounds like a really nice collaborative effort with wonderful results, and congratulations as well.
Representative Todd, do you want to answer that, or is there somebody?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, I think the majority of the clients that they serve are from the metro area.
I think more of the question...
I don't know whether they have...
If there's a statewide program for this, and
I don't know. These are non-profit organizations. A lot of their fundings come from foundations, and they get some from the state, and they're trying to get the state part. I'm sure down the road, if you want, they could hook up with you and work out some deal with Rochester.
Representative Norton, you'd be well advised to hook up with the lady that just sat down next to you, who's been very good at getting money tucked away here and there for programs and work, you know, youth development and other different types of programs like that. I'm sure she could give you some pointers and, you know, just kind of listen and learn and take care of your business.
I absolutely will do that. And I just want to reiterate, this is a statewide issue. There are many communities, not just Rochester, who have similar communities who could use similar help. And so not to take away at all from the program that you have, I congratulate you for having it, and would just look to perhaps a positive response in the future from other communities that would seek similar support.
We never did learn English very well where I come from, but that's okay. Resident Toss, so the $250,000 is coming to LifeTrack Resources now?
Yes.
And it is a, is it a workforce development money? Is that what it is? And has it been ongoing, or is it sunsetting?
The workforce development fund. It's been ongoing since 1997.
And it didn't, the governor didn't sunset it, or anybody didn't sunset it this year?
I don't believe so. I think it might be in its base.
Okay.
We're asking another.
Yes, I know what you're asking for.
You could
ask him for much around. Okay. Any further questions? If not, thank you all very much. And again, congratulations to you, Mr. Ibrahim. Good luck. House File 1530. Oh, Representative Mullery is here now? Well, I guess Representative Slocum, can we accommodate him? Representative Mullery, House File 58. And would Representative Clark would probably move. Representative Clark, would you move House File 58 to recommend it to pass?
Mr. Chair, I do move that it be recommended to pass, and it goes to, does it go into this bill? I believe it does.
I think it's going to... Well, let me see here. We'll go back.
So, Mr. Mullery, does the bill go into this omnibus thunder?
Yes.
Yeah, so I move that it be passed and laid over for a possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, Representative Mullery, and your witness, and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Basically, I think everyone knows that there is a huge problem with employment in a number of minority communities in the state. But the worst problems are, we've seen through Northwest Area Foundation and other studies that there seems to be an almost intractable level of unemployment in the African-American community of people who are descendants of longtime Americans and within the Native American community. And we really need to do something as a state to find out what's going on, what we're doing wrong in that area. And so all I'm asking here is that the state agency most involved with this area would study and do an initiative on how to actually accomplish promotion of more economically full employment or near full employment of people in those communities, which would include more job training, how to get people involved, how to get them jobs, and actually how to get them livable wage jobs. And I think as a state, for us not to have some goal at getting at this problem is a huge black eye for us. And this was a first step on actually developing a state policy on how to develop the ways to get over this problem. And that's all we're asking for here is a study. And I do have, unfortunately, I see that the bill didn't, I asked the reviser for the amended bill last time, but they put in the original. This did pass, by the way, and then got left out in conference committee, I believe it was 2 years ago. Mr. Chair, there are a few amendments I'd like to make orally, if that's possible. Or do you have a non-oral amendment rule? Or
do you have...
I've got them written down. If I could just...
It looks to me like it's your doctoral or your JD dissertation. How long is it there?
Mr.
Nino, you want to grab that and let Representative Clark maybe take a look at that. Is that, can this be done easily? Okay. Okay. Representative Clark then moves the following. We'll have Ms. Novak counsel can read the amendment to us.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment, Representative Clark's amendment, is on page 1, line 8, delete the words, and implement. And on page 1, line 9, after the second comma, insert, and Native Americans. Page 1, line 10, after the word should, insert, determine ways to. And the final amendment is page 1, line 11, after the word minorities, insert, comma, near full employment of minorities, comma.
Could you read that last part?
The last amendment is on page 1, line 11, after the word minorities, insert, comma, near full employment of minorities, comma. So the sentence, that sentence would read, beginning on line 10, at a minimum, comma, the initiative should determine ways to significantly expand the job training available to minorities, comma, near full employment of minorities, comma, and promote substantial increases in the wages paid to minorities.
Okay, thank you. Can you understand the other part of it? Are there any questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor of the Clark Amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. And then your witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And obviously, since it's in your committee, you can work on whatever language you want. My witness is Roger Banks, who works with a number of agencies. He's a professor and does a lot of the economic status studies and things like that. So
welcome to the
committee. He could explain the need for this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Roger Banks. I'm the research and policy analyst for the Council on Black Minnesotans. In that capacity, I work with a whole range of organizations and governmental agencies like the Governor's Workforce Council and their Diversity Action Subcommittee and various other areas that have a significant impact on populations of color, particularly African and African Americans. We were created in 1980 for the purpose of advocating, educating, advising the governor, his administration, and the legislature regarding issues that have a serious impact on African Americans and Africans. And I might say that this issue area in particular is critical for our communities. Economic development and employment, without that, will continue to have the kinds of economic and social disparities that exist in Minnesota and have for some period of time, particularly for populations of color. The disparities that exist are across the board, but they're particularly evident in the area of economic development and the ability of individuals of color to secure wages or employment with wages that are sufficient to allow them to carry on a somewhat meaningful life, a lot more than poverty wages that exist today. And so I'm here to speak in support of the House File 58, primarily for the purpose of ensuring that some form of effort be undertaken for the purpose of reducing the kind of disparities that exist in the economic sector for African Americans and American Indians in particular. We are very much concerned that, how can I say this in a tactful fashion?
You're in my committee. You don't have to worry about
that. Okay. To be very blunt, Minnesota Nice has ruined the economic opportunities for populations of color, particularly African Americans and American Indians in the state. Because what has happened traditionally is that generic policies and programs have been developed. And these programs, for all intents and purposes, do not have a significant impact on populations of color, because oftentimes they're not culturally appropriate, nor do they address the kinds of needs that these populations have. We're not just talking about employment opportunities. We're talking about a whole collage of issue areas that have a significant impact on our populations, but could be resolved somewhat through this kind of initiative, through some kind of study that really provides policymakers and our communities with the kind of information necessary to make effective policies and long-term policies and culturally appropriate policies. So with that, thank you very much for this opportunity, and I'm available, I'm open for questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Banks. Are there any questions of Mr. Banks or the or Representative Hollaby? I would have one question before I go to Representative Welty, and that is, do you have an anticipated cost, or do you expect D to just do the study and be able to do that in their current base.
Mr. Chairman, since we're taking out the implementation, I think that DEED could do the study without... They should have the information or be available somewhat. I don't think they need an appropriation for that. If we had left in the implementation, I think then there would be a need for some cost.
All righty. Representative Welkin.
Thank you, Chairman Rickovita. And to the testifier, Mr. Banks, are there resources that are currently out there that maybe we as legislators should be taking into account when we're setting policy? And just to give you an idea, we have heard from a number of groups that are bringing forward pilot projects that I think are very good, and they are targeting specifically people of color and minority in trying to get work and to trying to get them into small businesses and trying to get them established independently. And I think we have programs that are shown, proven to work, and I know Representative Clark has brought forward some really great initiatives. So beyond the pilot projects, though, I'm just wondering, are there resources, though, that we should be considering?
There's two levels, Roger Banks, Council of Black Minnesotans. There are two levels of resources that should be considered. The first has to do with resources for acquiring the kind of information necessary to make good policy. And the second has to do with resources that are actually programmatic, that is, intervention efforts designed to address the particular issues that we're being addressed with. But I'm very happy that you mentioned this issue, because the Council on Black Minnesotans, along with the African American Leadership Council of St. Paul, the NAACP, Urban League, etc., are sponsoring a legislative policymakers reception here in the state capitol on the 28th of this month, Wednesday, the 28th, from 3 to 5. You'll be getting invitations in the mail, but we'd just like to invite you to this, because what it is designed to do is precisely what you're talking about: familiarize legislators and policymakers with the kind of vast, you know, and tremendous resources that exist in the African-American and African communities, so that when it comes time for making policies, these individuals and organizations can be consulted to ensure that, you know, or at least to promote a greater impact and greater successes.
Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Banks, I just wanted to follow up with that. You mentioned a date that is very close to some of our deadlines, and we're going to be very busy running around from committee to committee. And so, you know, if not all of us are able to make it to that, I hope that you're going to be able to provide some resources to us.
Yes, we will. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, speak to his question.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do it quickly, though. As an attorney, I know how drawn out.
Representative Welty, that was part of the reason that I brought this. We definitely need a state policy, and as legislators, we are looking at all these kinds of programs, and we have nothing that has been developed on something as to what actually works, and I'd like to see if we have something in that area when we're looking at these programs.
It's just been brought to my attention by somebody from DEED in the audience. Maybe they want to come down and
Mr.
discuss
Alonji,
it. Yeah.
I believe it's him. Probably I see him up there.
And he suggested we do something with the language on line 117 and 118 dealing with the implementation, since we're not implementing it anymore. So,
yeah.
Representative Mahoney, do you have a suggestion to just delete the whole subdivision, or do you want some type of report? You were already requiring a report within 90 days.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I was intending... We did delete that last time when it passed, and you just called me Mahoney. It's hard to keep these Irish names straight.
Well, hey, listen, I'm from the Iron Range, Professor. We don't understand Minnesota nice where I come from. So just want that on the record. But anyhow, are you moving... would you want someone to delete? Representative Clark moves to delete Subdivision 3. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. No further questions then. Thank you very much, both of you, for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Okay, so there's that deletion too. House File Representative Slocum, would you like to take 1655 first so some of your students that have come here could come down?
That makes sense.
House File 1655, so Representative Slocum moves that House File 1655 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus higher education and workforce development bill. Welcome your testifiers to the committee, and we've already had a discussion on the OICs from, I think, both rural Minnesota, Representative Moe's district, and one of the OICs from the metro area. So perhaps if we could just have Mr. Courtney and Mr. Greg Ives and Stephanie Thompson talk, and then if there's some extra time, Mr. Means and Till also. Welcome all of you to the committee, unless you just want to give some brief introductions, either Mr. Means or Mr. Antel, and we could get into the to the students and the is it the coordinator? Welcome.
I have to tell you, this bill is near and dear to my heart. You may recall we had, when we were having groups come in and talk to us about the different availability of services in workforce development, I said, there's someone I know. And it was one of my former students, Aaron. And he was involved in this program. And I got to tell you, he was one tough kid. He hated school. I think as his teacher, probably the closest teacher to him at the time, I feel like I helped him to drop out because the school itself, we had nothing to give him. We didn't really meet his needs. It was not a good situation. He was an adult when he came here. I would have recognized his face anywhere. It was terrific to see him, and it was really terrific to see the success that he's achieved. And he achieved this success through this program. Now, I'm telling you, the kid had a chip on his shoulder, the size and weight of our capital, angry, everything you've heard, read about of a kid who really doesn't like school, doesn't want to be there, isn't interested. This is so not where he is and what he's about. This group turned him around. He's working. He's got training. He's got education. I was delighted, absolutely delighted. So I am particularly honored to be presenting this bill for the Minnesota Opportunities Industrialization Centers. They serve Minnesota's hardest-to-employ populations since 1967. They're part of a national network of employment and training programs. They teach life skills development and job training in a variety of areas, including career guidance, dress for success, ESL, GED prep, adult basic education, office skills, customer service, construction and building trades, and nursing assistant and healthcare careers. And that's where Aaron was, in the nursing assistant and healthcare careers section of what they do. Over three-fourths of their clients are minorities, and approximately one-half are welfare recipients. Yet despite the obstacles their clients face, and if Aaron's any measurement, they're big, the OICs have been extremely successful. OICs have served, over the course of their lifetime, 51,000 clients, trained over 22,000, and 13,000 have been employed, taking approximately 6,000 people off welfare programs. Every dollar that they receive, there's a $4 minimum overall return on the investment. They do this by educating their clients, assisting them in finding a career, instilling in them the confidence, and that's something that's pretty needed if you are having some problems, and the skills needed to become productive members of any community that they happen to be in. I want to thank you, and I want you to support this bill. I can't tell you how much how important this is to me and to a great population.
Thank you.
My testifiers will take you farther.
Whoever wants to start, go ahead and just identify yourself.
My name is William Means. I serve as the executive director of the Minnesota OIC State Council. Just as a quick review, we have five programs, one in Bemidji, one on the Mille Lacs Reservation, and three here in the urban area. The last biennium, we had $2.9 million that came through DEED. And to remind each of you that we do an annual performance-based contract with DEED. Because of the study that came out about nonprofits, et cetera, we want to urge you that, or inform you that we do submit an audit and quarterly reports as to our goals, et cetera. We're asking for an increase of approximately $1.1 million to a little over $4 million for the biennium. The purpose of that would be to train more people in livable wage jobs, which we've been very successful in 100 hard hats, which is building trades industry, as well as in the health industry. Matter of fact, in our Bemidji office, we took the best of the CNA, and we've enrolled 12 people who went from CNA. Now they're going in a partnership with the local VOTEC. They're going to become LPN nurses. So you can see with the money that we've been able to secure from the state deed, and you're in the legislature here, we've been able to make good use of that. I would just like to finish by saying that $1 million of that 2.9 came from the workforce investment monies. The rest was, I think, general fund.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. My name is Leroy West. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer at Summit Academy, OIC, which is located in North Minneapolis, which is also home of the 100 Hardheads program, which is a predominantly program that trains in the construction trades that train women and people of color in the industries of carpentry, plumbing, painting, heavy equipment operator, and electrical. Our students come to us from all different walks of lives. Certainly, we have at least 20% that are homeless, 26% dislocated worker, 32% of our students have dependents, 28% of them criminal history, criminal background, 78% unemployed, 57% 25 years or older, 79% are African American, 95% are male, and 96% are Minneapolis resident, which will be changing soon, which we are now replicating this successful program that will then reach in South Minneapolis with American Indian OIC, in addition to the Mille Lacs, in addition to St. Paul, because we understand the demand of the construction industry is changing, is booming, and there is a labor shortage, and we certainly are well position to train some of our hard to serve residents to get them gainfully employed and to make sure that they have a livable wage job. Because at Summit, we believe that the best social service program in the world is a job. And right now, what I'm going to do is introduce one of our students, Gregory Ives, who is a student here, will share his story.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Rice.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'd like to thank you for letting us come here today and let our voice be heard today. All of us are in our 16th week of training at Summit Academy OIC, and I've been asked to give personal testimony about how my life has been and how Summit has affected me. I am a 9-time convicted felon, and I've subsequently spent 7 years in the State Department of Corrections previously to coming to Summit Academy. And since I've been there, I've learned a number of different skills that will help me in life, like framing, drywall painting, just all the apprentice skills that I would need to get me a good-paying job out in the workforce. Before Summit, I had nothing but dead-end jobs. I was a welfare recipient, and I just was on a spiral downward going to nowhere. Summit has also helped me get a bank account. They've networked me and showed me how credit definitely means something in life. How to buy homes and stocks, bonds, everything that makes a human being successful. The impact that it's had on my life is I'm just proud. My family is proud of me. I'm not the black sheep of the family. I'm not Greg the felon. I'm Greg the carpenter. Greg the guy that's going somewhere now. And now I just have something that I can just give to my son. You know, I can teach him something other than go down the path that I went down. And just in closing, I would just say that I received a lot from Summit that will affect me the rest of my life. And now I see myself as a contributing member to society rather than a liability. Thank you.
Mr. Ives, we're all proud of you, too. Just let me ask a question, because there's a bill around, I think, this year. How's that? How are those felonies following you as far as when you try to get a job? Or
They do follow you. When they ask on applications, housing, it's just a burden. It's not a monkey. It's truly a gorilla on my back that I don't know how I can ever get off of it. But
Certainly we found we established some partnerships with our employers, and we let them know up front, you know, here's the background, here's the person, you know, here's where they've come from. And certainly they go through 20 weeks of rigorous training with us, and we certainly they have to go through, you know, their background checks and make sure they go through testing. And in this industry, it's probably one of the most felony-friendly industries that are out there if you're up front with them, and certainly they've been receptive at this point.
Well, I think we personally have to do something, too. You know, young people make mistakes, and when that stuff, and you know, I mean, we fund a lot of programs that make people criminals, but we don't, which I've always fought for. I'm kind of proud to say that I've only voted for a crime, judiciary finance crime bill one time in 21 years because of what we do to people. It follows on the rest of their lives. But I'm really proud that you have taken a new course. And
thank you.
I just want to ask another question like all you folks. So you're a carpenter or other ones, electricians and laborers and...
We're all in the
sheet metal carpentry
program.
All in the carpenter program?
Yes.
Well, in our 16-week program, we all are... Just about 95% guaranteed a job at the end of the week. If we successfully complete this program, we're all proud of ourselves. I'm one of the older guys. I'm 43.
Hey, that's young, buddy.
It was hard for me to find the school until I came to Summit Academy. There are not a lot of schools who fund felons, as Greg said. And I was very happy to hit Summit and... I'm
here to teach you. Why don't you just identify yourself as a tape, sir?
Oh, my name is Grant.
Okay, thank you. Mr. West, do you work with the building trades now? Do you guys go on to the carpentry training school too, or?
This is a pre-apprentice training, and then once we place them on jobs, then their employer then kind of move them into the apprentice training program, and we work very close with the building trades world. During the course of the training, we definitely kind of orientate them to the number of unions out there. We take tours. We really give them a broad range of what the industry is like, and kind of making that connection, because we develop them to a point, we give them their job, but then it's up to them to continue to carry on with their future success.
Well, I just want you guys to know one thing. We got two union carpenters in the legislature. One of them is Representative Nelson here, and the other one is Senator Bach, who is now chair of the Tax Committee. So someday you guys can be in the legislature and help straighten out some things.
Okay.
Representative
Clark? Can I just say one thing? This is a fabulous program, and the whole OIC programs are fabulous. I did notice when you were talking about the hard hats, it's 95% men. Are we going to get some more women involved in the building trades here?
We're certainly hope so. We're actually are making a concerted effort, and that's what we're expanding the program to reach the other OICs with. They have, to reach those other communities and those communities of color, and also women to get into the trade as well. We also have a strong connection We do understand that at some point there will be two new stadiums being built, and also there's also some horizontal building going on with new roads. And we know through these that this is a high growth, high demand industry, and we want to prepare the next workforce.
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank you all also for this program. Mr. Means, I represent Bemidji. Mike Bongo does a terrific job up there. And to remind the committee, they came and spoke to us before. The nurses that are provided by that program not only are, working with young people the same way you are providing them with jobs, but those are very needed positions in our hospitals and clinics. We have a shortage. And so they're providing the state of Minnesota with the huge needs for employment as well. So we appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Hahn.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to give clarity to the fact that if you have a felony, no matter how good a carpenter you are, with a set of rules, you can't hold an elected official office in the state of Minnesota, any elected office in the state of Minnesota, with a felony.
Well,
and so that's, I'm not saying I like
that
rule.
You can change that. You write laws. There you go. There's your next bill.
But it is a piling on. They can't even vote for somebody that is running for the election.
That's true, they can.
Yeah, they can once they do their time and meet their things, then they can come back and vote. But I'm just trying to make the point of this. My second year here, I realized that crime bill every year was thicker than the K-12 bill.
Yep.
And it was thicker because every petty misdemeanor became a misdemeanor, and every misdemeanor became a gross misdemeanor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have more criminals. We've made more people criminals around here. That's my point.
Thank you.
Representative Eastland, I think, agrees with me on that one. Ms. Thompson, maybe you can tell us, or is it Ms. Thompson that's here? Maybe you can tell us that you're going to be a carpenter. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Stephanie Thompson. I'm 24 years old. I'm a single mother of two, and I started the OIC about 2 weeks after I had my daughter last February. And I got into the School of Business Small Business Ownership Program. I finished that in September and then started Administrative Assistant Program, two of them. So I did two small business and Administrative Assistant, and learned all types of computer skills. As most people, I dropped out of high school and got my GED. And they taught me how to publicly speak, how to dress for success, as I think somebody said. And my mom always encouraged us to get full-time jobs and do this, and schooling wasn't an option, it was work. And so when I went back to school, she wasn't very happy, but I'm glad that I did, because everything I've learned in school I now do at my full-time job. I work for Mille Lacs Band Reservation. And I really would have to thank OIC for everything. I wouldn't have been able to do this a year ago. The last year I did so many speeches and talked to so many people. I don't think I would have been able to do it a year ago. I was really shy and I couldn't speak about anything personal and my life experiences, anything like that. I was encouraged to start the student council at our school because of the leadership roles that I've had. That's where I met Dr. Antel, and he's been encouraging me ever since. I go there. I don't go there anymore, but I am up there 2 days out of every week just to talk to everybody. I still call my teachers. I still call Dr. Intel if I have any questions, or if they're always there for me anytime that I really need them about anything. So I would like to thank them, and I really encourage this because I argue with people all the time about. I work at the TANF program, which is just like MFIT, but it's tribal TANF, and I really encourage them to do short-term training like this because it helps me get off the program, and hopefully I can encourage somebody else to get off the program, to do everything. So,
thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Again, I think we're proud of all of you and the directions you've taken. Are there any questions for Ms. Thompson? And are there any further questions?
Excuse me. I really don't have anything new to say except that...
Would you identify yourself? Just...
Pardon me?
Identify yourself.
I'm sorry. My name is Dr. Lee Antel.
Welcome.
And I'm the President and CEO of the American Indian OIC. For many years, the American Indian OIC has been providing short-term training. The clients we get don't have the time or the resources to go to school for 2 years or 4 years. And with the MPIP requirements right now, they need very short-term training. Speaking on behalf of the women, I think 90% of our clients are women, mostly American Indian, single mothers, although we do have a some clients who are African American and Somalian as well. Our core program is the School of Business and Office Technology, which Stephanie is referring to. Short-term programs in a variety of areas, including nursing assistant and several others. But we exist because there is a growing need for short-term training. The MPIP requirements are so tough that people don't have time to go to school for as long as a year or longer. So that's in a nutshell the American Indian OIC, and we've been doing this since 1979.
We think you're all doing a great job, and I want to thank you for your testimony and Representative Slocum. We'll see what we can do to get some extra money. And with that, thank you all very much, and we'll take up Representative Slocum's next bill, which is House File 1533. And maybe you can do it quickly because... we have Representative Hartman's bill that we want to get to and get out it and finish before we... So, I've seen two of the three guys coming up there around the Capitol before, so maybe we can just have some short testimony and a short introduction from you and the other folks don't have to say too much. Welcome again. Representative Slocum moves that House file 1533 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the higher education omnibus bill. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Committee, I'm not real good at that stuff, and I didn't do it last time, and I'm terrible.
I did. We got it. Okay. We got it. We got it on the record. Go ahead.
All right.
My only rule is I don't have many rules.
I like that. That works for me. I'm delighted to also bring this bill forward, and... Again, this is just the right thing to do. There's a program here that the Hennepin Carver Workforce Investment Board asking that we fund them to coordinate the Partners for Progress Regional Skills Consortium. This is for employment and training that directly addresses the critical shortage that we currently are experiencing in healthcare workers as well as the projected shortage into the future. I'm seeing buttons, a lot of buttons that say squeeze the surplus. Oh, there isn't one. Not the taxpayer. If you want bang for your buck, this is the program. It delivers for what we need as opposed to what funding they're requesting. This is an excellent program. I'm going to let my testifiers introduce themselves and tell you about it.
Mr. McLaughlin, go ahead and make her quick for it.
Really quick.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John McLaughlin. I'm the director of the Hennepin Carver Workforce Investment Board and the Workforce Service Area. We coordinated the program for the past several years using federal money called the Partners for Progress. All the metropolitan area workforce service areas were part of it. All the metropolitan area hospital corporations were part of it. And every school, post-secondary school that we could find online, private college, MinSCU, whatever we could get, we incorporated into this program in order to train people to move up in their health care occupation and to backfill with those who are on our roles, either MPIP or Workforce Investment Act. And here to tell you all about the program and the details is Dr. Bruce Noss, who is the program coordinator.
Dr. McNoss, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much. This is a $3 million project that we operated for the past 3 years, $3 million from the federal government to basically address the healthcare worker shortage. Our primary focus was in nursing, but we actually did 20 different other occupations. The majority of them were nurses. If I can just give you an image, and I know you've heard it many, many times. There are 70 million baby boomers approaching the age when they are going to need increased medical care. People born between 1946 and 1964 are fast approaching retirement age and the age when increased medical issues land on their doorstep. And with that, at the same time, we have an aging population in general, and we have fewer workers entering the workforce. We have 90% fewer workers entering the workforce than we did in 1970, when most of these baby boomers entered the workforce. That, along with the fact that the existing workforce in Minnesota is tapped out, we are number one in terms of women working in our workforce. We are ninth in the country in terms of a state that where people have more than one job. We have more youth working in Minnesota than any other state. We have utilized our existing labor pool in a very, very high degree. That, combined with technology and advances in medical care, has created a significant demand problem. If you will, think of this thing as 70 million baby boomers have gotten on a train, and that train is moving down the track with incredible momentum. It's not something that we can stop, and it's not something that we can derail except by inaction. This is something that, there's the old saying, we can pay now or we can pay later, but we will pay. This is something that is not going to change. That freight train is on the track. And frankly, if we continue to produce nurses at the level that we are in our current system, we will be 9,000 nurses short in the year 2015. Now, if time is going as fast for you as it is for me, that's right around the corner. And being that short, who will take care of us? Who will take care? If you think about it, who will be that nurse standing next to your bed? Will it be anybody? Or will it be like the Invisible Man movies from the 1940s, where the clothes are there, but there's nothing else there? It's a significant problem, and one that we're not going to be able to avoid. This project that we operated over the past 3 years gave us what we think is phenomenal results because it joined together three large sectors: employers, the education system, and the workforce system. And we found that we've got an engine that will work. We can address the nursing and the healthcare shortage if we have the resources. The model and the project that we operate, we serve 527 people just in the metro area. Of that 527, 88% got an educational increase. They either got a degree or a certification or a license to operate in a medical field.
Did you track to see if they got a financial increase in their wages?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. 80% got a wage increase, and 64% of the people that went through the program got a promotion as well. So three measurements or metrics. Did they get a wage increase? Did they get an educational increase? And did they get any kind of occupational increase, i.e. promotion? And in all those categories, the project was exceptional, way above what we thought. And in part due to the efforts of our educational system, which I have to applaud, and also due to the employers. Employers put up $1.5 million in cash. It couldn't have been done without them. And then the numbers that we achieved would not have happened without them. The three sectors, the three people, the three major groups that we have involved, education, workforce, and employers, need to work together. That we have our unique bureaucracies. But this project showed that we could. If we get the juice, if we get the gas, we've got the engine. We can move on this thing, and we can make a dent in it. And that would be it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
No, I think it's a wonderful program. The 527 people that you said you served, we all, only 12% then didn't actually complete that. Okay, Representative Gunther.
You answer my question. My question is, how many people do they serve? 520. Thank you.
Members, great programs, all of the programs we've heard about the other night, and by the way, speaking the other night, Representative Norton, would you move them both the March 12th and the March 13th minutes? And are there any additions or corrections? I'm sure you've read them over.
I did glance at them, yes, when I came in, and I would move both minutes.
Why can I move these at both, or do I have to move them singly? Well, I can do both. Okay, Representative Norton, that's right, I need to move. Okay, Representative Norton moves the Monday, March 12th and Tuesday, March 13th minutes. No additions or corrections. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Slocum, you know, before I just want to say, again, both great programs. You just spent, or tried to spend, or are asking to spend a cool $6+ million, you know, over the last 15 minutes. And we know that money's still really, really tough around here, and we'll do our best to try to fund this. But I know that you probably agree with me that we need to raise a little more revenue. And I don't know if we're going to be able to, but we'll see what happens. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say thank you for this program. It's a really important one. And I have to say, in the last couple of days, I've probably talked to maybe three different groups that are trying to work in the healthcare field to bring people together. And I'm just wondering what kind of coordination we might be seeing or having. For example, I met with some people today who are involved with MinSCU and the some sort of partnership. I don't think it's the same one. That
Health, Industry, and Education
yes.
Partnership.
Are they yeah. part of your
yes.
group? Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, that's important to know because I think, and the OICs have a healthcare program, and the youth build is going into healthcare. And the one thing I'm really interested in is that people don't get stuck on somewhere rung of the ladder that's kind of low or mid-level. For example, that a nurse, someone who gets started in the nursing program doesn't get stuck at an LPN level or maybe even a two-year program, but gets to go all the way, because the difference in wages is very significant, and there's a lot of room for advancement. And so I guess that's just the one thing I want to say, is that you know, if we're really trying to get people to be self-supporting, they need to get all the way as high as they can go. And I'm just wondering, when you're tracking, are you tracking for that, and is there some, you know, assurances you can give us about how we're doing with that, or how we could do if you had the resources?
Dr. McNaught?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, yes, we track these folks for a year after the project ended. And in some cases, like, for example, if you had a CNA, a certified nursing assistant, who became an RN, we saw increases in the wages of almost 100%.
Yeah, easy.
And so your concern was one of the foundation elements that the federal government asked us to address, was what kind of career ladders are you providing for these folks? And so that was a key question, and actually we feel that our results, especially the wage increases and the promotions, were very, very much indicative that we met that. And so we tracked these folks for a year afterwards. And we did work with the Health, Industry, and Education Partnership, Mary Rothschild from Minnesota State College and Universities, and we have tried to collaborate on a number of things to move this along.
Sure, I just want to encourage that. And I think the discussion about peer apprenticeship programs, insofar as they can plug into what you're doing, I think is also very, very helpful. So we can get the kids in high school, not just you know, with a vision of being a CNA, but that they want to be a nurse or a physician or a dentist, or, you know, that they really do see those higher levels. Because, as you said, those of us who are in that baby boom generation, I'm right on the cusp of that, we're going to need them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, we worked with Roosevelt as well, and we created a special program for about 24 of their kids to participate very much pre-apprentice. They were doing their high school work as well as working with paramedics. So we tried to build in that thing from K-12, from womb to tomb, so to speak.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you all very much. A worthwhile program, and let's see what we can do.
Thank you.
Representative Hortman moves House File 1711 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Education Workforce Development Bill. Representative Hartman, go ahead, and Mr. Seck is here with you to tell us about a very good program that I think we actually can find some money for, because it doesn't come out of the general fund. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Jerry Seck from representing the
Go ahead.
In 1976, Norway made a bicentennial gift to the United States
Frank Moe's distant cousin, Roger Moe, was in the Senate. He authored a bill to match the money, and Representative Ken Eakin's father was in the House. He authored legislation to match it so they could build a center in Minnesota, which they did, and the Norwegians thought they had a real idea of how to get disabled people back to work. And so the center was born, and 22 years ago in a weak moment, kind of like you did when you decided to run for office, I agreed to be the chair of the Board of Inland when I had no staff, no money, $3 million in debt, and looked like they wanted to go bankrupt anyway. And since that time, we have now expanded to 41 beds for 170 acres on Lake Independence, and we have a staff of 40 people, and we basically specialize in treating people with disabilities, with a subspecialty in brain injury, chemical dependency, as well as job training. About 15 years ago, Senator Don Samuelson, who had been knew about Vinland, asked us if we could do something with people who were, on, had, were injured on the job and had long workers' comp tails. There was, they put $100,000 in a bill, and we brought some people out and had great success in getting people off of back to work after they had separate injury on the job. And it was, I still remember the the story. They sent a family of three kids and a mother and a father in to see the board to urge us to continue doing this, and the guy was making $17 an hour as a furniture mover or something. He got injured on the job, and he then spent the next 6 years basically watching TV, getting drunk on the couch with beer, sold the boat and motor, sold the trailer, wife filed for divorce, kids couldn't stand him, and pretty soon he was sent to Vinland. And we basically, you know, we have 170 acres, we have prairie grass, it's really a serene, peaceful place. We try to motivate people, and we have people who are sitting in a wheelchair, and so they understand what it's like to have some other kind of disability. The guy ended up being willing to go to work, went to work for $7.50 an hour. It was a big ego problem for him, but he came in and the whole family wept and said, "You don't understand how important a job is." And to get people sometimes who have been productive and suffer some problem, that's what our specialty is. We're in the workers' comp special, as a special fund, and they send people out. We're in the budget for $150,000 a year. We're asking for $200,000 with the ability to kind of carry over from year to year. We only take people that, after they're referred to us, we're on a fee-for-services basis with the department. So the department has to send people, tell us how long they want them to stay and what we want to do, what they want us to do with them. And so far, now they're sending people, instead of waiting until they're out of job 5 or 6 years, which is really hard to turn somebody around because they're getting a check every month. And oftentimes they don't want to change. Now they're trying to get people out as soon as they can after they've been injured on the job. And we're having a tremendous success in getting people back to work, in school, in some kind of training. You know, if the injury is really significant, try to get them into some kind of a volunteer, productive role in society. So that's what we're doing, and hopefully you can see fit to increase this from 150 to 200 grand in the budget. So,
well,
and I, by the way,
are you sure you're not Italian the way you talk that long?
Yeah.
You regret that in the end?
I'm learning more, by the way. I'm phasing out, trying to bring in some younger, better-looking, smarter people to me. So she'll be around talking to you if you have any questions about the Vinland National Center. So.
Would you like to comment at all? At all?
No.
Actually, the first thing she did was recruit her mother for the board, so no. Mother's making sure we treat her right, so.
And Representative Hartman, any further questions? Things to add?
Renew my motion for be laid over to be considered an omnibus.
And we will certainly give it the utmost consideration because I know the wonderful job you do. Members, just to remind you that tomorrow we do have a number of bills that are dealing with tuition and textbooks, and so if you could be on time because it's probably going to take a long time, and it's in Narnes left. So with that, members, meeting adjourned.